Suppose that means we start. Right. Homage to the Buddha, homage to the Dharma, homage to the Sangha. Good morning. I find it helpful in these times when we are facing so much to welcome in all those who are willing to be with us and to help us as we navigate these unprecedented times. This may be for some a little bit more woo-woo. So if you're more left brain believing in things you can only see and touch with your hands, you're welcome to do a minute of breathing while we do this. So calling in the Buddhas and the Bodhisattvas, the enlightened masters of past, present, and future, Dharma protectors, Naga, Nyo, Vajrapani, Dharma protecting Devas, beings of love, light, and respect, spirits of the mountains, Kwai Yeast, and all the mountains of the Cascade Range, spirits of the Columbia and the Willamette, the Great Pacific Ocean, spirits of fir and oak and cedar, juniper, all the plants of the vegetables and the berries, the medicines, spirits of the two-leggeds, the four-leggeds, the six and eight-leggeds, the winged ones, the ones who swim in the waters. Please be with us now. Please put the vision in our eyes and the words in our mouth, courage, compassion, and clarity in our body, hearts, and minds. Please guide our hands and feet and help our hearts to open. And any energy which doesn't belong here, energy which is not in alignment with the greatest good for ourselves and the many beings that call this place home, wherever our home is, we release and redirect to its place of highest transformation and carve this out as a safe and sacred space. Thank you. I've been reflecting on this year plus that we've been in and on how that's been impacting my heart and the hearts and minds of those who I've been interacting with the pandemic, with the climate crises, the wildfires, the floods, the hurricanes, the typhoons, the protests. There's been so much loss. And when there's loss, we grieve. We usually grieve together. That hasn't been an option. We usually grieve when the thing that's happening is done. But that hasn't been possible. There's the term ambiguous loss for those things that we've lost that haven't come to conclusion, like someone who dies in a war and their body is lost, or a pandemic that's not done with us yet. And we're dealing with cumulative loss, where it's been loss stacked upon loss, stacked upon loss, stacked upon loss. Usually, historically, cumulative loss is the kind of thing that we experience later in life when more people that we know are dying, when we are also losing our independence, our mobility, maybe transitioning to new housing environments, but that's no longer the case. That doesn't seem like reality. So it's a lot. Pandemic persists. Black women and men continue to be killed by police under questionable circumstances. The wildfires, the heat waves have started hitting us again. Flooding on the East Coast. And then you add in the challenges of your particular life at work and home and family and friends and health. I know I can only fundamentally speak for myself, and it has been overwhelming to deal with the immensity of grief. And I have noticed after being a Buddhist for 20 years and having done, you know, 100 sesshin, that has not been enough. There has still been this tendency to push the grief away and say, no, not now. Or to distract myself with, you know, can I get a funny meme? Can I get a funny video? Something, give me something. Let's shift our focus to gratitude for all that I have, you know, my health and living in a country that's not at war on our land, depending on how you experience war. Or from the perspective of the absolute, what's happening is fundamentally neither good nor bad. Those are all things that can be helpful at times. I have great respect for those as strategies. And grief, you may probably know if you've been around long enough, it just doesn't disappear if it's ignored. Emotions arise because they need to be felt. And I've noticed that in the face of all this grief that and struggling to be with, that I've become more irritable when I lose my ability to be with the amount of grief. I have troubles getting myself to sit down to the cushion. Sometimes I feel more anxious or feel depressed. There's a researcher named Paul Arai, who's done some beautiful, beautiful conversations with the Japanese culture to understand what we can learn from our tradition as it persists in Japan. She has this book where she researched Japanese women and their rituals of healing. And one really striking quote from that book was, "When I'm kind, I know I'm healed." So when we lose our ability to walk into grief, and I can only speak from my experience, I lose the ability to heal, and then I lose the ability to be kind. Now, this ties for me with some of the cultural stories that I hear, particularly in the Buddhist tradition here in the States, of a person who is deep in their spiritual practice is at peace with everything. They, maybe that's true, but I find that peace is like of a whole musical piece. Peace is like the last note. And in order to get to that note, I have to be willing to accept all the other parts that are this palette of human emotion. We have to. And sometimes it's helpful to look at an exemplar like the Dalai Lama. So he appears relatively happy and peaceful despite a very challenging life. I think no one would contest. And there was a video documentary about him that explained when Tibetans come over from the Himalayas, escaping Chinese rule, that they are greeted by the Dalai Lama, and he meets with them and he hears their stories. And in that video, portraying just the one or two incidents, he sat there and he heard the stories and he cried. He wept with them as he as he was in deep relationship with the pain that they had experienced. Now, my mind is very slippery. I won't speak for your mind, but when I hear a quote like, when I'm kind, I know I'm healed, or when I hear the Dalai Lama experiencing that, I can spin a story about, well, okay, so if I'm practicing well, I should be able to hear torture and pain from every and any Tibetan refugee day after day and maintain a sense of perfect peace. Or I must be kind in order to be healed. I can create this image of perfection that then I am living in relationship to and judging and criticizing myself for the reality that I'm not fully there. And that's just, it's bogus. Imperfection perfection is pain in my experience. Perfection is pain. That's its primary function. with the glancing illusion that perhaps if somehow someday that benchmark was reached, then shame could be avoided, criticism, no one would be able to judge. Doesn't seem to track. Versus more my aspiration for all of us as spiritual practitioners, and certainly for myself fundamentally, is that we make space for the whole palette, the whole range of our authentic human emotions, the positive ones, ones that we like gratitude, and the ones, the negative ones, the painful ones. And grief is one of those emotions that's usually seen as the negative. There's a spiritual teacher, Martine Brechtel, who says, grief is praise for those that we have lost. And to not grieve is violence to our own hearts. When I hear that, I think of the word dukkha, which if you look at the etymology of the Sanskrit, that there's ka, which translates roughly to the hole at the center of a chariot wheel. And du means bad. So if you think of it like a crooked wheel that's not functioning smoothly, it's going to be grinding against its axle. It's going to be slowing down the cart. It's going to be making a bumpy ride for those in the chariot. So to not grieve is violence in our hearts, because our hearts are designed to grieve. Hearts are designed to love. And when love is lost, grief is the natural process. It's like saying, I like in-breaths. In-breaths are really good, but I'm not such a fan of out-breaths. So I'm going to try and avoid breathing out as much as possible. It doesn't quite work like that. And as the living, we have a responsibility to grieve for those who are gone. The embodiment, archetypally, is Avalokiteshvara from the Heart Sutra, or also called Guan Yin, whose name translates to the one who can hear the cries of the world, can receive and can respond. And even in Buddhism, where we portray this being that receives all cries, there is a story of the immensity of pain fracturing Kuan Yin. And as a result, Kuan Yin, some images you may see, having 1,000 arms after realizing that two wasn't enough, and 11 heads in some cases, that one wasn't enough, that just expanding, growing to become bigger. If you ever get a chance to go to Japan, in Kyoto, there's this incredible building called Senju Sangendo. It's 900 years old. It's the length of a football field. And there are 1,000 life-size golden Kuan Yin standing in risers about 5 or 6 deep. And it's awesome in the truest sense of the word to look down the length and just see Bodhisattva, 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 Bodhisattva. Because it's true that the grief of the world is bigger than any one of us can manage. So, and yet we have to be able and willing to be with the pain in order to heal. So I want us briefly, as we sit here together in beloved community, to see if we can tap into this. So I'm gonna walk us into a guided visualization of seeing ourselves as Kuan Yin. And you participate in this in the way that feels best to you. If the image becomes too intense, too overwhelming, if you feel like you're drowning, you're always welcome to let it go, to let the words fall into the background, and just focus on your breath and the feeling of sensation, of the contact with the floor. So with that caveat, I invite you to imagine 1,000 golden life-size Kuan Yin in front of you. First, just seeing them, these bodhisattvas. Their 1,000 arms, radiant hearts. Breathing in that experience, that reality, as clearly as you can in your mind's eye. And then when you're ready, you can step forward and turn 180 degrees, and you step into the body of one of these Kuan Yin, absorbing it, becoming one with. And then taking a few breaths, breathing in this new body, allowing yourself to attune to the frequency of deep compassion. Experiencing the radiance of this vast heart. So you breathe in and you breathe out. A heart that feels larger than life. Then I'm going to offer to you, Bodhisattva Kuan Yin, some beings who we've lost. And I invite you to bring in their whole being, their whole life energy, the pain and the beauty. And in the cauldron of this beautiful, magnificent heart, Bodhisattva heart, all the pain becomes incinerated like flash paper. Nothing remaining but the beauty, the love, the joy of their life, which will radiate out as an offering to the world. So taking in Dante Wright, 20-year-old, beautiful black man, shot, getting into his car. Breathing it in. Allowing it to, the pain to release, to burn. be purified like dross. Breathing out the love, beauty of a life. Breathing in Joe, a man in Bend living without a home who died last week in the heat wave due to exposure. We don't have to know this person to know that they had a full life. And also knowing that we're holding this together. We're holding the pain of Joe and the love and the joy of Joe and processing it. Breathing out all the love, all the connection and the goodness. Breathing in Makia Bryant, 16 years old, Black woman, Columbus, Ohio, killed by police when she called them for out of concern for her safety. Trying a different one, thinking of the fire in the bootleg fire currently burning across 77,000 acres near Klamath Falls, Oregon. So each of us gets to take in deer, fir tree, squirrel. We get to share the burden so much. Breathing out the love, the beauty, the grace, the joy of a life, whether human, plant, animal, the preciousness. And then noticing how it feels to have tried to connect deeply with that part within us that can be with the discomfort, that can be with the wholeness of loss, places where we might have found edges. This is where we might have found strength that we didn't know. This is where we found connection. If your eyes are closed, you're welcome to open them. I'm gonna end with a poem by called Kindness. By Naomi Shihab Nye. Before you know what kindness really is, you must lose things. Feel the future dissolve in a moment, like salt in a weakened broth. What you held in your hands, what you counted and carefully saved, all of this must go so you know how desolate the landscape can be between the regions of kindness. How you ride and ride, thinking the bus will never stop. The passengers eating maize and chicken will stare out the window forever. Before you learn the tender gravity of kindness, you must travel where the Indian in the white poncho lies dead by the side of the road. You must see how this could be you. How he too was someone who journeyed through the night with plans and the simple breath that kept him alive. Before you know kindness as the deepest thing inside, you must know sorrow as the other deepest thing. You must wake up with sorrow. You must speak to it until your voice catches the thread of all sorrows and you see the size of the cloth. Then it is only kindness that makes sense anymore. Only kindness that ties your shoes and sends you out into the day to gaze at bread. Only kindness that raises its head from the crowd of the world to say, "It is I you have been looking for," and then goes with you everywhere like a shadow or a friend. So, gratitude for being here today and practicing in community. I invite now any wisdom that you've been learning from this year plus of grief, kindness, of love, of your own hearts, questions, answers, words of wisdom.
Thank you, Ryushin. That was lovely. I put a question in the chat. I was just curious about what that Dalai Lama video was that you saw.
I don't remember. It's been a few years. I need to try and find it. I can try and find it and send it to Domio or Lisa to share.
Thank you.
Yeah, of course.
Thank you, Ryushin. That hall of Kuan Yin's in Japan sounds wonderful. Can you give me the name of that? Do you remember it?
Yeah, I'll put it in the chat. Senju Sangendo. And actually I have, I'm not able to share my screen, but if you Google it, you'll see there's beautiful images of to give you a sense of what it's like. It doesn't capture the experience of being there, but it's still pretty impressive. And
thank you.
Yeah. So just, and I have no way of knowing how all of this lands in your hearts and minds today. I take it as a privilege to be able to sit in silence when that is the authentic response. So sometimes that's the right response. How incredible to have a practice that allows us, when there's nothing to say nothing, or to say, I have no words to heal the loss that you or we have experienced. So the best that I can do is just sit and breathe with you. What a gift.
We are quiet because what you just said is so profound.
Yeah. There's a lot of grieving that we need to do before we will be healed.
Roshan, I was just at a talk where the topic was joy. Mm. And I mentioned that because of the loss of my mom a couple of years ago, that I was having difficulty finding a lot of joy. And the speaker told me that I thought it was very profound, but he didn't expand on it. He said that grief and joy can coexist. So are you able to kind of open that up for me?
Sure. I mean, sure. As I experience it, like, when I grieve, what I am grieving is a celebration of the life. And that has, it's the whole package. It's like, I grieve I grieve the beauty of Dante Wright's and all that his life was in such a short life, all that wasn't there, that didn't have a chance to form, just the wholeness and embracing it all. It's intense for me when I try to embrace the whole thing, to embrace the whole package of one's life, and then as Kuan Yin, to allow the pain, to allow the dissolution of that which no longer serves, can be liberated and freed, and then to offer all the goodness. That's my experience, is that it includes the joy. Does that make sense, Joan? Does that resonate with your experience with your mother? You know, all the goodness of the times that you had with her, even as the sadness and loss?
I suppose it's a healing process, you know. You see her walking down the sidewalk with her walker, and she's not there anymore. The memories come up when you're trying to do your everyday activity. And I suppose that in time you learn to, well, I'll try what you said, is appreciate the meaning of her life and yeah. what she gave to me.
I have a dear mentor who was just, she was like a ball of love. I'd spend a half hour with her, and she just, 90 years old, had seen communities come and go, had seen all sorts of death and loss and joys and birth, and she would just sit there and love. And I have a voice message that she left me. Nothing in particular, her just saying, yes, this time works for me. I'll see you on Thursday. And I listen to that sometimes. And there's no reason why it should touch my heart, but it does. It's so precious that person whose voice I'll never hear say something else. And holding, allowing that little experience to tie, like Naomi Shihab says, to the cloth, the whole thing. And just allowing myself to be with that without needing to solve it, fix it, move away. Yeah. And then it gets too much sometimes. And then I go watch a funny meme.
Yeah. It's probably a lot to do with learning how to accept impermanence. Yeah. That's probably the crux of the whole thing, you know.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah, Aaron.
We have some folks with hands up. Well, I'm one of them, but Brian is before me. So I just thought I'd let you know.
I see your hand up. Please.
Thank you. I guess the thing that I was led to reflect upon was in my own encounter with grief, it has been sort of a bifurcated psychological experience, the anguish of loss, and then the building of a new relationship with the departed. Mm-hmm. So I hadn't really thought very much about how those two sort of cisterns or domains of grief really related to one another, but I will reflect on it.
And you know, I really appreciate you bringing that up, Brian, and how it connects to Joan's loss of her mother. And just in the last year, I've seen this when I've gone to Japan, and it's only been within the last year that I've placed in my home an altar for ancestors. And so every day I offer incense, and it's an evolution. It just feels right to do it. And to be in relationship to those that I can no longer see, I can no longer speak to in the same way, and to feel connection to their energy, however is true for you. That's something that I find helpful and healing. And as I say, that it is 100% a process that just felt right. It just felt like, oh, I see that in Japan, I ask about it and I say, oh, well, that makes sense. And then I don't do anything about it for like a decade. And then finally it's like, oh, I guess I'm gonna I found this little thing for like $10 at Goodwill that's just like wood perfect, hang on the wall, and then I can put some incense there and it just feels right. So, you know, being with organic nature or spiritual unfolding, which is also how I relate to the calling in and saying, hey, I wanna be in right relationship and I don't totally know how to do that. So anybody who wants to help, I welcome it. Whether I can see you, can't see you, I welcome it. If you're a living being, a tree being, river, cool, I'll take it. I don't have to understand it. I'm just going to accept it. So, Aaron, did you have a question?
I did. Thank you so much for your talk today. Very much appreciated. I hope I'm not putting you too much on the spot with this. So, the last couple of weeks, I've started a new community, a Zen community in Alberta, and so one of the things that there's a few teachers that are going to be coming in and giving talks about on a series we created as an opener series. The symbol of the lotus and personal reflections on Zen. And so much of what you're saying, really, you know, growing from the mud and coming up to blossom as the lotus. I'm curious, do you have any, not like I said, not to put you too far on the spot here, but do you have any thoughts about that symbol as far as what you were talking about today? Thank you.
Yeah. I love the image of the lotus because it grows out of the mud and it sits. The thing that I love about is that we see the lotus flower, we see the lily, and the roots are still right there in the mud. They don't go anywhere, right? And we can focus on, oh, it's so beautiful, that, you know, lily on top of the pond, how wonderful. But the roots are solid and the roots are as important. That lotus would not exist if we deprived it, if we cut it off. So whole package, whole truths is really the part that I resonate most with that. I appreciate you bring that as a, we learn, and as creatures, as human species, we learn through story, we learn through metaphor. And so I think the lotus is a beautiful metaphor for our spiritual practice.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you. Any other thoughts, reflections? Fair enough. So we can leave it there. Some things to reflect on, some ideas, a practice that you could lean into, as I know that I'm hearing that Bright Way may be starting to meet again in person, which would be lovely for those that are able and choose to do so. And the pandemic's not over. And so that's another image. You know, we grieve general, we grieve in as community. And so this image of thousand Kuan Yin that we can lean into, we know that around the world, I know people practicing today in week-long retreat, cultivating their heart, and we can tune into and tap into their practice. We're not separated by time or space when we allow ourselves to connect. So with that, dedicate the merit. So any goodness that comes from our practice today, our chanting, from our zazen, from these talks, words, thoughts, reflections, may they be nourishment, may they be the boundless food for all those on the path of awakening. All Buddhas, Bodhisattvas, awakened beings, Maha Prajna Paramita. Take good care of yourselves and each other.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Wonderful. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.